regains the trust of its citizens is by telling the truth. There is no other way, no shortcut.
And I call upon our government to open up like the Belgians have, the French have, the Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
It is way past time for all of us to know what our own government knows, instead of being kept in the dark by a policy of ditto.
The last time that Congress held a hearing addressing the extraterrestrial issue was 1968, 44 years of sightings ago. In those 4.5 decades, hundreds of thousands of new sightings have taken place. Government agency witnesses have come forward. Media coverage has expanded. Hundreds of documentaries have been produced. Thousands of books have been written. And yet the United States Congress has remained silent. So for a period of 5 days, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, and 12 blocks from the Congress of the United States, we're going to conduct a citizen hearing on disclosure of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. 40 to 50 witnesses of high rank and station, from military, from agencies, possibly from intelligence services, along with the top researchers in the world, will give 30 hours of testimony to 5 former members of the United States Congress.
So maybe the citizens' hearing has a chance to try to leverage open some of the truth about the fact that we're not alone in this universe, that we might actually begin to look at what we really are, what the true history of this planet is, and that might be what gets us into a future without self-destruction.
The motto of the citizen hearing is, if Congress won't do its job, the people will.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable, the countdown to disclosure. I'm so happy to have you back here again today. Sometimes in the mornings, I get so rushed because I have a lot of things to do, and you know, where I am, it's the noon hour. So every morning I skid in, you know, 5 minutes to noon, skid into home plate, get ready for the program. And I ask myself, well, do you have anything to talk about today? So I'm starving. I haven't eaten anything today, and it's time to be on. And every single day I get excited and happy to get a chance to talk again. And so, and when I hear that intro, and he's saying, we're going to be at the National Press Club, we're going to have 30 or 40 witnesses every single day, it's like, we are? That's so exciting. Seriously, everybody, listen. This is the deal with disclosure. When we have full galactic disclosure, the Western worldview changes. Everything changes. All of a sudden, we have to change all of our institutions. Disclosure is completely incompatible with today's Western worldview. And so we have to come to terms with the fact that once we do have disclosure, what it means is that we have to change our institutions. We have to change what we're teaching at university. We have to take a close look at our courts and our judges all the way to the top, not only in the United States and Canada and the UK, but other places as well. Those are the immediate ones that come to mind. We have to change our federal banking systems. We have to change our financial institutions completely. What we have in place is not compatible with the worldview that includes disclosure. We also have to take a look at our politicians and how they're interfacing with intelligence, Department of Defense, and others. The ones who wish disclosure wasn't happening are the private contractors who are making billions and billions of dollars off of the advanced technologies, and we don't know anything about it. We don't know a thing about it. So that's why I always say that disclosure is the remedy to all the other maladies on earth. You know, and then there's these little things. Those are the big things, the little things. You'll never have an electric bill again. You'll never have a fuel oil bill again for your house or natural gas bill or however you heat. Plus, all the free technologies for energy will be released on us. Solar, you'll have solar at your house. And then all the opportunities for retraining into new information systems, into new technologies, and be able to do whatever you want to do. And you won't have to be a slave at some job, fill in the blank, you know? How many people have fulfilling jobs right now? We'll have fulfilling work. So it will change us spiritually to be happy. Our children won't be doing without anymore. So that's why, you know, I'm being a little bit silly, but not really. When I hear that, we're going to have that. We're going to do that. That's so cool. Because to me, it impacts the whole world. That's how I see it. I want to share with you about my new website that I built over the weekend. But I'm going to hold off on that until later. I also have this lady we're going to listen to talking about multidimensional reality, because as we're bringing in these changes, it's important that we learn how to discipline our thoughts and how to realign ourselves with the fifth dimension and remind ourselves how to do that. So what I'll do first is I'd like to introduce you to another one of the witnesses. So this, in my opinion, you know, I hope nobody's taking any of these dumb opinions I have about everyone's my favorite seriously, but this is all a kind of saving the best for last. Today we're going to talk about Paul Hellyer, and I'll just read this to you. There's no way I could explain his career. Whenever I try to explain Canadian politics, I get emails from Canadians telling me that I really shouldn't do that. Paul Hellyer was Canada's youngest member of parliament when he was first elected in 1949 and the youngest cabinet minister appointed to Louis Saint Laurent's government 8 years later. After a stint in opposition, he subsequently held senior posts in the governments of Lester B. Pearson and Pierre E. Trudeau, who defeated him for the Liberal Party leadership in 1968. The following year, after achieving the rank of senior minister, which was later designated deputy prime minister, Hellyer resigned from the Trudeau cabinet on a question of principle related to housing. Although Hellyer is best known for the unification of Canadian armed forces and for his 1968 chairmanship of the Task Force on Housing and Urban Development, he has maintained a lifelong interest in macroeconomics. This led him to form Action Canada, a populist movement dedicated to the concepts of full employment and low inflation, with an emphasis on quality of life issues. Through the years, as a journalist and political commentator, he continued to fight for economic reform and wrote several books on the subject. In the spring of 1997, he joined a coalition of concerned Canadians to launch the Canadian Action Party, which was dedicated to reforming the banking and international financial system, which is squeezing the lifeblood out of the world economy. Remember, we heard from the Canadian Action Party, from Connie, I can't remember her last name. She had sent a notice out saying that two Canadian citizens were suing the Canadian Federal Bank, Canadian Foreign Minister, the Canadian Financial Minister, the Queen of England, and a few others were named in that lawsuit. And they were claiming that the banks in Canada were pulling the money out, spending it on other countries, without the approval of Canadian citizens, and they could prove it. And that that was a breach of their contract with the Canadian people. More recently, Hellyer has been interested in UFOs and the extraterrestrial presence and technology. Ironically, many years ago, on June 3rd, 1967, Defense Minister Paul Hellyer flew in by helicopter to officially inaugurate an unidentified flying object landing pad in St. Paul, Alberta. The town had built the landing pad as its Canadian Centennial Celebration project and as a symbol of keeping space free from human warfare. The sign beside the pad reads, "The area under the world's first UFO landing pad was designated internationally by the town of St. Paul as a symbol of our faith that mankind will maintain the outer universe free from national wars and strife. That future travel in space will be safe for all intergalactic beings. All visitors from Earth or otherwise are welcome to this territory and to the town of St. Paul." At that time, however, his interest was more academic than real. As Minister of National Defense, he had received sighting reports from time to time, but was too busy unifying the Canadian Army, Navy, and Air Force into a single Canadian Defense Force to have much time for other pursuits. So his curiosity about UFOs was a back burner issue until about 2003, when a young entrepreneur, Pierre Jeannot of Ottawa, began sending him material about UFOs and the ET presence. Hellyer replied honestly that he didn't have time to read the material, but the patient Jeannot accepted that fact and just kept sending it from time to time. A call from Jeannot prompted Hellyer to watch ABC News' Peter Jennings reporting UFOs Seeing is Believing special in February of 2005. Hellyer quickly concluded that all the air traffic controllers, policemen, airline, and Air Force pilots who said that they had seen UFOs must be telling the truth because they had no reason to lie. Still, the subject of UFOs remained pretty much in limbo. Meanwhile, Jeannot had sent him a copy of The Day After Roswell by Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso, a retired United States Army intelligence officer, that appeared to be good summertime reading. So a year later, he took the book on vacation and read it with great fascination. He knew from the nature of the content that it must be authentic. In a telephone conversation with a retired United States Air Force general, he was told that every word is true and more. He was told that there had been face-to-face meetings between United States officials and visitors from other star systems. Days earlier, he had been invited to speak to an exopolitics conference in Toronto, but had decided to decline because he was not a ufologist. After reading the book, however, and having the content confirmed, he decided that he had a moral responsibility to go public because the issues involved were so profound, and he believed that it was absolutely essential that the people of the United States and of the world know what was going on and the possible consequences, both immediate and long range. So he accepted the invitation that had been extended by Victor Vigiani and Mike Bird to speak at their Exopolitics Toronto Symposium on UFO Disclosure and Planetary Direction in Convocation Hall at the University of Toronto. On September 25, 2005, he made international headlines by publicly announcing that UFOs are as real as the airplanes flying overhead. In doing so, he became the first person of cabinet rank in the G8 group of nations to say categorically that UFOs were real. In the months and years following this declaration, Hellyer has been inundated with material from around the world, classified and unclassified. He was a recipient of many books, most of which he read. He was briefed by some of the best ufologists in North America and had the opportunity to interview witnesses with firsthand knowledge of various aspects of the phenomena. This increasing level of knowledge and understanding has made him absolutely determined to do everything possible to assist those who are demanding full disclosure by the U.S. government, because the issues are of inestimable importance, not only to Americans, but to the future of humankind. His objectives include a space preservation treaty to ban the weaponization of space. So here's this politician who's highly regarded. He walked off his job because he didn't agree with his boss. He's a principled man. He's worked on the unification of the armed forces. So he's talked to everybody. And it gets thrown in his lap that he can be a bridge between the maladies that are bothering the world and the fact that disclosure solves those maladies. So I'm going to share this presentation with you. He's being interviewed and talking about this issue, and you're going to see what a nice guy he is and why he's so beloved in Canada. Enjoy this.
I say that it's the most urgent problem in the world at the moment, but the most important is the environment. We're wrecking the planet. We're doing it at a very fast pace. We're going to have to stop wrecking it, and that means huge changes. Too late for more offshore drilling, too late for more projects in the oil sands, too late for more huge, noisy windmill farms, all of this stuff. We have to get onto the real technology that is going to make it possible to do this job and do it correctly and do it quickly. It was told to me that they had developed both zero-point energy and cold fusion, and either one of these or both could be used to change the world by getting off fossil fuels. It is, my opinion, a shorter period is 10 years. We have to mobilize as if it was a mobilization of war for our own survival, which, in fact, in many ways it is. Yes. You see? Well, then the other big thing is we have to change the world banking system. Yeah. And the time has come for us to say, hey, enough is enough after 2.5 centuries or whatever of putting us in debt this way and making slaves of us all. Balance our budgets and get our economies back up to scratch, employ the unemployed people, and then do this tremendous job that has to be done of converting from an oil economy into a clean energy economy.
Hello, Apollo here with the Honorable Paul Hellyer. Beginning in 1963, Mr. Hellyer served as the Minister of National Defense for Canada. Paul has been outspoken on the U.S. government's withholding of UFO information, and as well as its aggressive stance on the extraterrestrial presence. He is the author of Light at the End of the Tunnel. We're happy to have you here, sir. It's an honor, Mr. Paul Hellyer.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Just going to jump right in, for those who may not be as familiar with you, sir, how would you summarize your work in the UFO field?
Oh, on the UFOs?
Yeah. Well, environment and what you're doing.
Well, it's as far as the UFOs are concerned, I'm not a ufologist. And I don't claim to be. So in my book, Light at the End of the Tunnel, I only have one chapter on ufology. It's titled, We Are Not Alone in the Cosmos. And I put it in there largely as a primer for the whole world of skeptics who might read my book because it has a different title and it's about different things, and perhaps get enough interested then they would then carry on and learn more about the extraterrestrial people and what they have done and are doing. And that's not my specialty. My specialty is really finance, international banking. And so that is my number one interest. And I say that it's the most urgent problem in the world at the moment, but the most important is the environment. We're wrecking the planet. We're doing it at a very fast pace. We're going to have to stop wrecking it, and that means huge changes, both as far as the financial system is concerned and as far as the disclosure of exotic fuels that might have resulted from the back engineering of the extraterrestrial people's technology for all 60 years now. and that these things all fit together. So we have to get change, big change there, and then, of course, big change with us humans, too, and stop killing each other for various minor reasons, including religion, and start working together to try and build the kind of world that we all want to see.
Yeah. Now, you, in that one chapter, and I know that you're one of your tie-ins with the UFO field is the technology that that could help us with the environment that is purported the extraterrestrials might possess. And could you comment on that?
Yeah, I think that they, working together with U.S. scientists, have come up with exotic fuels. It was told to me years ago, probably a decade ago, that that they had developed both zero-point energy and cold fusion.
Right.
And either one of these or both could be used to change the world by getting off fossil fuels. It is my opinion, in a shorter period of 10 years. And I have set 10 years as the deadline. I know some scientists who think they've gone past the Rubicon. And I said, well, even if that's true, I hope it isn't, let's say that we've got 10 years to do something, but we've got to start right away. We have to mobilize as if it was a mobilization of war for our own survival, which, in fact, in many ways it is. So that's exactly the mode that we've got to be in, is get off our chairs and do something and do it now. And, of course, there are some real problems involved. And one of them is the misinformation being put forward by the oil industry, which has lulled a lot of people into thinking, if we go, oh, we got 30 years or 40 years or 50 years, and they're still drilling for oil in the Gulf of Mexico, and they're still making new projects in the oil sands in Canada. And I'm saying, too late for all that. Too late for more offshore drilling, too late for more projects in the oil sands, too late for more huge, noisy windmill farms, all of this stuff. We have to get onto the real technology that is going to make it possible to do this job and do it correctly and do it quickly. So that is the big thing. Well, then the other big thing is we have to change the world banking system and stop letting a few private individuals create all the money as debt, which puts us all so far in debt we can't afford to do anything, and cut back all over the place and just to raise the enough money to pay the interest on the debt we already have. And so we have to have a real change there. And what I'm going to recommend to the or say to the Congress is that I wrote a book in 1999 saying that the next world war would be between the people and the banking system.
Right.
And so now is the time to get at it, because they're mobilizing all their big guns, which are the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve System, and the Bank for International Settlement. They're getting all ready for their final assault on we the people. And the time has come for us to say, hey, enough is enough after 2.5 centuries or whatever of putting us in debt this way and making slaves of us all, that we've got to reverse the tables and bring enough money country by country to balance our budgets and get our economies back up to scratch, employ the unemployed people, and then do this tremendous job that has to be done of converting from an oil economy into a clean energy economy.
Is it fossil fuels? Is that a major problem in the economy?
Well, the fossil fuels, it is the major problem with the survival of the world.
Okay, right.
It is an important part of the economy. And as an excuse, we say, well, this would be a tremendous disruption.
Right.
Well, of course. What do you know, if you're launching a war to save the world, you're going to have some disruption. Just as World War II, we stopped making automobiles, we stopped doing this, we stopped doing that until we could win the war, and then we started doing those things again. So we have to get off the oil economy and move to the new energies. And the people that are working now pumping gas will be helping build the engines of the new cars and the new airplanes and the new houses and all of the things that have to be done to revolutionize the world.
So you spoke about a 10-year window, and how do you see the world after that?
If we were to attempt and succeeded in changing from the fossil fuels, the world would look very different in the sense that we'd have all new cars, new airplanes, and Gazans would no longer have gas furnaces, and we'd have little boxes probably in each one and all this sort of thing. But we would redirect our energies, and this is the important thing, into providing a more equitable and just world, where some of us were no reading and others starving, and where some of us get all the education that we want and others don't even get grade school, and where some people today are not having any medical care and, you know, all of the things that if we were a just world, we would say, okay, now I talk about the kingdom of God on earth. This is what we should redirect a lot of our military effort toward. And I define that as a world where every child has enough food to eat, clean water to drink, and a roof over his or her head, enough clothing to keep them warm or dry or whatever, enough medical care that they don't have to die unnecessarily from some preventable disease, and enough education that they can, you know, find out for themselves if they have the potential to go on and serve their fellow person, their fellow humanity, as teachers or doctors or whatever, or laborers, whatever fits into the overall scheme of things. And you'd have a tremendous growth, but it would be a green growth, a sustainable growth. I mean, a lot of environmentalists, well, you don't want to increase GDP. Well, changing all of the cars to new ones would certainly increase the GDP, but it's going to help save the economy. And what is your aim? If your aim is a sustainable world, then let's do the things that have to be done and get all of the people of the world, especially the unemployed at the present time, involved and engaged in it. So that's sort of my take on the situation.
I have to ask you, since you were the Minister of Defense for Canada, and what insight can you, I know that's just not your primary focus of your field, but what insight could you give us in how major governments deal with the UFO phenomenon? What's Canada's position? Are they is there a Canada Roswell? I wanted to ask you that.
If there is a Canada position, I'd like to know what it is too.
Okay.
There was a crash in there. Probably been more than one, but there was a crash in northern Manitoba some years ago. And Grant Cameron, has identified this and talks about it on his website and so on. And I guess one of the things that upset Canadians is that the Americans rushed across the border to seize it.
Like,
oh, yeah. And had armed guards all around. And this Canadian, even the people from the Department of Transport, which I used to head, wanted to investigate. They said, oh, no way you're going to get close to this machine. And so they checked with Ottawa, and finally Ottawa said, well, let them have it.
Is there any openness at all? Would you compare it to be better than the United States? Because the United States, like Mexico, is very open about it. Other countries around the world. I'm just wondering if Canada has any. Would you compare them?
I don't think it can compare them.
Really?
No, I don't. I don't even know how much information we have, if any.
Okay.
I don't think we're very much in the loop anymore. I think we probably were in the loop more in the 1950s.
Oh, okay.
Than we are now. But that's just my guess. And I may spend a little time in the next year or so trying to find out what's going on, but I haven't had time. I was writing the book and doing other things.
Oh, yes. I understand that in 1960 you inaugurated a UFO landing pad in St. Paul, Alberta, Canada. Can you tell us about that? Because, in fact, if I may read this post-it sign beside the pad, and it reads like this, the area under the world's first UFO landing pad was designated international by the town of St. Paul as a symbol of our faith that mankind will maintain the outer universe free from national wars and strife, that future travel in space will be safe for all intergalactic beings. All visitors from Earth and or otherwise are welcome to this territory and to the town of St. Paul. So what was it like for you, and how did it all come about?
Well, that sounds great to me now. I'd like to be able to write that.
Yeah.
It's beautifully written, and I don't think I was even aware of it. I probably read it at the time, but actually,
it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, yeah. And I don't really think I took the whole thing seriously.
I was going to ask you about that.
No, yeah. This was our centennial year.
Okay.
And senior ministers, which I was one, were invited to go across the country and help celebrate the centennial.
Yeah, okay.
And so this little bilingual town in northern Alberta got in touch with me, and they were so persuasive. And they were doing more projects. They did more projects for the centennial than any other town in Canada or city.
Everything was covered.
Everything was covered.
Even UFOs.
And even the UFOs. So I said, sure, well, why don't I go out there? So I got an airplane and flew out and participated in their ceremony. I had a wonderful day with them. They're just wonderful people. Just sound like something they would write. And I had a wonderful day with them.
Okay. But you didn't read the pad. You didn't read the sign.
Well, I probably read it, but I would have gone in one knothole, not the other, probably, at the time. But you know, looking back, I take it with greater seriousness than I was at the time.
Also, in 2005, you accused the President, George Bush at the time, of plotting an intergalactic war. And I wanted to ask you about that. I think, I have a quote here, I believe it says, the United States military preparing weapons which could be used against the aliens, and they could get us into an intergalactic war without us ever having any warning. The Bush administration has finally agreed to let the military build a forward base on the moon, and which will put them in a better position to keep track of the goings and comings of the visitors from space and to shoot at them if they so decide.
No, I want to deny that. Quote.
Okay.
That you
use. Okay. Good. I wanted to make sure.
Right. But most of the rest is correct.
Okay.
That they, in my opinion, have been developing weapons.
Basic, right?
Yeah, they've been developing weapons that are, in my opinion, designed to deal with extraterrestrials. They've certainly been designing tracking ways of finding out where they're going and when they're coming and going and all of that sort of thing. And I think even though the Army had been trying to get a base on the moon for years, I think that President Bush finally gave permission for them to start going ahead with it.
Right.
And so this is really just kind of routine if you get into the military orbit of what was going on, because they have taken this.
Listen, everybody, if you've not heard of this before, I wrote two White House petitions about this exact thing. George Bush Sr., by presidential mandate, by executive order, founded the Space Council. And the head of the Space Council, he appointed ex-NASA chief Richard Truly. And the New York Times wrote three articles from 1989 to 1991, highlighting the work of the Space Council. And the Space Council, it was answerable to the president, the vice president, the head of Treasury, head of the Pentagon, Joint Chiefs of Staff. They made an executive report every year. They had a budget for the Space Council in the billions. And they built Moon and Mars bases. And the New York Times wrote about it. And Richard Truly, I'm not privy to what he said or what he thought, but the New York Times was reporting that he and George Bush disagreed on certain points of the Space Council. So what George Bush did was fire him, close down the Space Council, and make all the records. He sealed all the records, so we couldn't see any of it. We've never seen any accounting for what those billions were spent for, and they built Moon and Mars bases back then. Full galactic disclosure is so important because they're doing things that you know nothing about. And even if the New York Times reports on it, you're going to skim over it and not even see it. And it's time that we ended that now.
This whole phenomenon very seriously.
Right.
And General Twining designated them as enemy aliens right from the beginning.
Exactly.
And I don't know that designation has ever been withdrawn.
Right.
I think it's a good thing we should try and find out.
Yes.
Ask Secretary Gates if anybody has ever withdrawn it, and if so, when was it done? I think it still applies.
Yeah.
And what some of us fear, of course, knowing General Eisenhower's reservation about the people into whose hands all of this technology fell, that it might be just used as an excuse for spending another few hundred billion dollars of the taxpayers' money, providing lots of promotions for generals and more business for the industrial industries that support the war machine.
Yeah.
So they have a motive for doing all of this, which they say, oh well, we're concerned. Maybe there are some friendly people up there, but maybe there are some that aren't so friendly, and we can't take a chance. So we've got to have all this stuff ready in case they should start shooting at us. Well, if you go back in the history of the last 60 years. We're the ones that have started all the shooting.
Yes.
And sure, they have retaliated in a few cases, and I think any fair person would say, well, if you shoot at me, my life's in danger. I may want to take a crack back at you, just rather than just saying, you know, kill me. My life's done, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but all of the initiative, the hostile initiative, has been on our part, rather than vice versa.
Yes.
So I think this is something that has to be examined very closely. And as part of the disclosure process, I would like to see that come out. And I would like to see people cross-examined under oath who say, well, there's a real threat. Because, you know, why do you say that? How many times have you been subject to attack? And were they provoked? And could you give us information to prove that that is so? And not just speculation, which would be good for maybe your... purposes, which may not be in the best interest of the United States or in the world. So it's a toughie. And I like Carol Rosen's presentation to the Congress, and it is realistic. There's going to be expiration. You can't stop the military from trying to fly to the, wherever they're trying to fly to, and don't really want to, but you don't want them to take off saying, well, we're armed to the teeth. And the first person that even looks at us sideways, we're going to shoot first and ask questions afterwards. Because that is exactly what's been wrong with the world for thousands of years. And we don't want to say, well, okay, well, let's extend our barbarism to other parts of the galaxy. See? And so I think it's something we really have to dig into.
I think it's fantastic that you're part of that. That's really wonderful.
You know, I'm curious about you mentioned seeing a report by Peter Jennings on the subject, and tell me about that.
The ABC did a two-hour special,
yeah, right.
And he was a Canadian, and and a friend of mine was one who told me. Actually, the friend was the same guy that sent me the book, and he insisted that I watch this special because I was busy at the time, and I usually said he'd send me a lot of stuff, and I said, well, I've got time to read it, just pile it up, and I think he was. He was counting on me to get more and more involved as time went on, and finally his faith paid off, and I proved to be what he had hoped for. He picked me really to because he thought I would be fair and just in my decisions and my judgments. And so he was the one that got me interested, and I watched that, and I could see the wobbling back and forth because the skepticism, the reality. But you watch all these ex-policemen and pilots and military pilots say, hey, I've seen one of those things. And you say, are these people all liars? And maybe one or two, I don't know if one or two are or not, but I don't know how you could, ABC would put together a two-hour show and only pick out liars. So I said to myself, hey, these guys are telling the truth, and so there's got to be something. There's got to be something to this.
You know, also there was something about Stephen Hawkins commenting on ETs that I think you had a comment on that said that the most extra. This is Stephen Hawkins quote: the most extraterrestrial life could be only in the form of small animals. There could be also nomads looking to conquer and colonize other worlds. What was your reaction to that statement?
Well, I really, to be truthful, thought it was irresponsible.
Right.
here's a great scientist who obviously isn't up to date on what's going on in the world, and portraying a picture that was so far from reality, it was just the reality of his imagination, that it was highly misleading. And consequently, I thought it was irresponsible, and I said so. And I would say so again. If I was talking to him, I would say the same thing. I really am interested in these scientists who are saying, we've got to find a planet out there which will sustain life. And I said, well, why don't you go talk to your own government? They can give you a list of them.
How do you handle your critics or disbelievers in the whole UFO thing? That's a bunch of bunk. How do you deal with that?
Because they're misinformed. They haven't done that research at all.
I've got one today, and I was just figuring out whether I was going to give them an impolite reply or polite. But I've decided on the polite and say that he's really proving the point. He said, how could the government keep it quiet all these years? And I'm going to say, in a very nice way, that you're providing proof that they've been able to. Then give them the URLs of some of the speakers from the Congress. Say, don't take my word for it. Go see some of the stuff that these guys have accumulated and see what you think of it.
I'd like to flesh out, if we could, just the one chapter that you have. And I understand, I really appreciate your approach with your book and trying to create a mainstream bridge to the issues at hand, the important issues, which, of course, is our environment, our economy. And you have that, just had me think I've slipped that little UFO chapter. And I'd like to explore and flesh out what that chapter said. I haven't read your book, sir, but what did you speak about in that chapter, and what was your intention?
Also, I just went through my experience and then my interviews with these people that we were just talking about and others, and then some conclusions as to how many species there might be that we've identified already, what the ships look like, the variety from the small Fufu fighters up to allegedly other ships mile wide. And some,
wow, that's a chapter. That's a great chapter, Paul.
it's a good primer.
Yeah,
and that's what it's designed for, is to say, well,
it's a teaser.
Yeah. And a lot of my friends who have read it have been influenced because they trust me. And they say, hey, if you're saying this, maybe there's something to it. And this is the way it was intended. It's not a book on UFOs, but it's a book that gets people, I hope, a little bit interested. And maybe saying, well, if Heather says so, it could be so, or maybe it is so, depending on how well they know me. And then, of course, it has the relation that I draw, of course, between the reverse engineering and the possibility of using it to save the planet. And so it ties into the book. It's all part of a whole, comes together. But it's definitely a primer to get people interested.
When you mention different species, how many species do you think it is? What did you write?
Well, I don't know. When I had Ed Mitchell, Apollo astronaut, for dinner one night, we were bantering back and forth, and he said, how many species do you think there are? And I said, well, somewhere between 2 and 12. He said, yeah, that's what I think, too.
Really?
I think I list six in my book.
Yeah, you have six in your book.
Yeah. And I have since learned about the tall whites.
There's over 200,000 species, actually. But, it's a big universe out there.
Which I was unfamiliar with before, but I had a long chat with somebody who had worked there and who got to know them and to trust them and vice versa. He told me a lot about them, and I'll be mentioning those very briefly in my address here.
Well, what a fantastic vision for our planet and our world. Thank you, Paul Hellyer, for all your work and efforts and what you're doing. And we're just so thankful for you, sir.
Well, thank you very much. You've been awesome. Most kind, much too kind. But I just feel a responsibility. I'm nearing the end of my role. And I feel that as long as there's a problem, and there sure is at the moment, that I have to do what little I can to contribute to a solution.
It's a great contribution. Thank you, sir. And that's all for us now. I'm Apollo, and thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Paul Hellyer from Beth. I look forward to meeting you. Thank you for your work. You are amazing. All righty. So now what I want to do is share with you one of the pages of my website. I'm just going to briefly read this. I got an email from a guy in the Netherlands, and he wrote me, and he sounded indignant, and he said, "I'm just going around trying to get attention." And I laughed really hard when I read it, and I was thinking, well, yeah, the more people that are awake and aware right now, the easier the flow of change is going to be. So what I'm reading to you now is a class offering that I'm giving. And the classes begin on April 16th. And, maybe people will say, well, she's doing this now because she's trying to make money or whatever. And that's not really true. It takes a lot of effort to take the expertise I have and apply it to a class and share it with everybody. So the only reason I would do that is if it's going to help with disclosure. And so this is a quote from Dr. Stephen Greer. "Consciousness transcends space and time. It is bound by no time and no place. And yet it is present at every place and is witness to every time. It is subtle and all-pervading, yet it is at the very core of our own being. It is that whereby we are awake. It is that whereby we are. While we are generally focused, bound, if you will, to one space and one time, consciousness is essentially unbounded, and therefore so are we." Dr. Stephen Greer has been talking about how he teaches people to connect with extraterrestrials. And so this article I'm about to read to you is commenting on that. And the reason I wrote it is because we have to remember that in our consciousness, we can go into our heart and talk to the friendly extraterrestrials out there and tell them we want a world of peace and welcome them and invite them into our lives on Earth to land and to share with us what they know. And I'm hoping everyone will do that. So you can do that without any training at all, just like prayer. And it's linking your consciousness with the consciousness of the extraterrestrials out there. This is our galactic family. These are our friends. You can think of Ashtar and the Ashtar Command, Sananda and the Galactic Federation. You can think of the Intergalactic Confederation of Worlds. There's a lot out there, and they are able to pick up on your heart linking with them. So I encourage you to do that. There are some very sincere people out there who have been meditating for years, and they've gone to conferences and they've studied at workshops and they've read books, and they haven't been able to make etheric or physical contact with ETs yet. And these are the ones I'm making the offering to, the ones who want to take it deeper. There are two types of extraterrestrial contact we will experience together: etheric contact and physical contact. Etheric contact can be viewed through your mind's eye, between your brows. It is experienced from the Merkaba body, which is your vehicle to take you into outer space. Physical contact is experienced through your senses: sight, hearing, taste, touch, smell. You will see your visitor's craft, and you may see them if they are close enough or if they land. Dr. Stephen Greer has created an Android and iPhone app to help folks make contact. There's a link for that in there. About 4 or 5 times a year, he takes a group of about 20 people out to make physical contact. He has given a clarion call for as many as possible to embark on making contact. there's a 10-minute video inserted into the post at this point of Dr. Stephen Greer explaining about what he's doing with making contact. I have been making etheric and physical contact daily for 10 years. I too can teach you how. I do not use technology for this. I connect through consciousness, and I can teach you as well. This can be learned by anyone who has the longing, intensity, humility, and love to practice, practice, practice. Dr. Greer mentioned meditating 6 or 8 hours a day. I too do that. I have done it every day with a full-time job working as a nurse. And I would get up at 3 a.m. and meditate for 3 hours, live a normal life between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m., and then go back to meditating 3 hours. On the weekends, I would stay longer in meditation. I was making contact, and it was very enjoyable to spend part of every day there. It is very important now that we have entered the fifth dimension to make contact and ask for peace. Each time we ask for contact, our galactic friends are given the opportunity to lend support and help to move forward with landings. As we reach out as a conscious collective, it builds layer upon layer through the dimensions, bringing through the embodied hearts on Earth and changes we seek inside the fifth dimension. I have designed a series of 4 classes to teach you these techniques. They are as follows. Etheric contact. This class is for folks of all experience levels. Each class will be part lecture and part lab. This lecture will cover meditation, mantra, and intention. I will discuss each and give pointers for more effective practice. During lab this day, we will attempt contact on the etheric plane. I will facilitate an initiation with transmissions through guided imagery to take you to a point in space. This day we will contact the Great White Brotherhood on Sirius. Some will indeed have contact this first time out. Others may practice the techniques taught this day and have success of etheric ET contact after a little bit of practice. Each class will be taught on a conference call. After you register, then a phone number and conference code will be mailed the day before class. The second class, etheric contact. This class is for folks of all experience levels. Each class will be part lecture and part lab. This lecture will cover techniques for upgrading your vehicle and what the Merkaba body is and how to use it. All classes build upon the last. During lab this day, we will attend holodeck training at Alpha Centauri. I will facilitate an initiation with transmissions through guided imagery to take you to a point in space. This day we will meet Saint Germain at the Alpha Centauri holodecks, where we will undergo a training for contacting ET by beaming up to Nibiru as a group. Some will indeed have contact this first time out. Others may practice the techniques taught this day and have success of etheric ET contact after a little bit of practice. Each class will be taught on a conference call, etc. Class number 3, etheric contact. This class is for folks of all experience levels. Each class will be part lecture and part lab. This lecture will cover techniques for connecting with coherent thought, an introduction on the Earth Merkaba, and etheric ET spacecrafts. All classes will build upon the last. During lab this day, we will travel on the etheric to Saturn. I will facilitate an initiation with transmissions through guided imagery to take you to a point in space at Ra's creation temple on Saturn. There you will see Ra's crystal staff and be taken to the etheric rings of creation, where we will intend world peace on Earth and invite our ET friends to land here and interact with us. Some will indeed have contact this first time out. Others may practice the techniques taught this day and have success of etheric ET contact after a little practice. And the class number 4 is physical contact. This class is for folks of all experience levels. Each class will be part lecture and part lab. This lecture will cover techniques for physically calling in the ships. All classes build upon the last. During Lab This Day, we will connect by coherent thought to invite ET visitors physically in the sky overhead, wherever you are. I will facilitate an initiation with transmissions through proven techniques to call the ships. Some will indeed have contact this first time out. Others may practice the techniques taught this day to have success of physical ET contact after a little bit of practice. So I wanted to share with you the potential of these classes. The classes, these four classes, will be taught in April on Thursdays and Saturdays. You can join one class or join all four classes. And I will be posting more about the techniques for folks who decide not to join the classes, so more information can go out. We're getting close to the end of our time. I want to share a presentation about multidimensional reality. But first, before I do that, I'm going to let you know that I'll be traveling tomorrow. We're going to have to rebroadcast some of the radio programs because I'll be completely out of contact. We're going to rebroadcast Linda Moulton Howe, Richard Dolan, and Stanton Friedman. Those were all done about a month ago, and it's possible that you missed them. So it will be new for you, for some of you who can't be here every day. And I'll be traveling to Pennsylvania to visit Sri Swami Purna, and we'll be working together with the energies, working on different projects for disclosure. That will be a very necessary trip to take as I finish out the rest of the month of April. I was invited to LA on April 22nd to see Dr. Stephen Greer's LA premiere of the Disclosure Project movie, which is serious. So I'll be doing that, and then I'll be carrying my energies there. And a week later, I'll be leaving for Washington, D.C. for about 10 days. And I will be at the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. I'll be a guest of the organizers, and I'll be in on all of the testimony. And during that time, I believe what we'll be doing is live streaming an hour each day during the hearing. I haven't heard otherwise so far. So I want to thank everybody who's donated to me to prepare for these three trips. You know, as you know, I'm a completely volunteer service for everything I do, including these radio programs. And I have my readings, and that's my only income. And I still have many commitments to make through the month of April. So if you feel inspired to give me a contribution on galacticroundtable.org, then my traveling expenses have been taken care of, but my responsibilities for this month, there's nothing to give them because there's so many expenses going out this month. So I appreciate all your help, and anyone who's interested in a reading with Sananda, just email me and we can arrange that. So I have this great short presentation from this lady about multidimensional reality, and it's designed to help you break up the programming in the matrix and challenge your mind to think in the fifth dimension. Enjoy this, and thank you, everybody, for everything you do.
Are like the weeds.
Hi, it's Simona. I have decided to make
11 videos about 11 universal laws for all those who really want to understand them. I know it can be a bit not easy to find the information about the laws, as not many people know it, and certainly not common people know all the laws. Therefore, I just thought that I will just sum up the 11 laws that I know. And I used some websites and the books to summarize all the laws, especially one book that is that helped me a lot to summarize the laws was a book called Working with the Law, 11 Truth Principles for Successful Living, written by Raymond Halliwell. So here it goes. First law is the law of thinking. Life is a mystery only to those who don't take the time to understand it. As your knowledge and awareness grows, you will find that you are often amazed at things that happen, because the power of the universe inherent within you becomes truly magnificent, but you no longer wonder why or how they happen. Knowledge and understanding replaces fear and ignorance. The invisible becomes visible. The unknown becomes known. Once you understand the laws and learn to live by them, everything makes perfect sense. The ruling mental state of a person determines personal destiny. In fact, there is no greater influence on your life than your ruling mental state. If it's optimistic, harmonious, and open to new thoughts and ideas, positive people and experiences will be drawn to you automatically. A negative state of mind will in turn draw negative people and events to you. It is indeed a truth that like attracts like. Thought is an actual force or substance, even though it's invisible. Thoughts are like electricity that travels through all the thinking stuff, the quantum field, that makes up our entire universe faster than the speed of light. Thoughts are power. Power cannot act without producing an effect. Therefore, our thinking is constantly producing effects. What we hold within our minds inevitably takes its form in the outer world. If you wish to gain control over your life, you must first become the gatekeeper of your mind and think only positive thoughts of an ever-expanding nature. There is no such thing as cold. There is only absence of heat. Likewise, there is no such thing as poverty, only the lack of abundance. Therefore, if you want to feel warmth, focus on warmth only, and the feeling of cold will disappear. If you wish to attract abundance, focus only on success and prosperity. Then your experience of poverty will no longer be able to survive. The mind creates seeds, good and or bad, that are planted in the soil of the quantum field. Much like in a garden, if you plant things and water them, they will thrive. Your negative thoughts are like the weeds, which you must not nourish, so that they will naturally wither away. Pull the weeds so they don't choke out the good plants. Weeds will die from lack of cultivation, and negative thoughts will disappear as you foster positive ones. Replace fear with courage. Replace disease with healthy thought. Replace thoughts of limitation with thoughts of plenty. Whatever we put energy into grows. Whatever we believe becomes. Whatever we expect happens. If your thoughts are chaotic and disorganized, your life will reflect that, resulting in pain and confusion. Heaven is a state of mind, an orderly, disciplined, constructive state of thinking. In order to live in a state of grace, you must have an orderly mind. The average person thinks at random, with thoughts that wander all over the place, moment by moment. The average mind has control over the person, but it should be the other way around. It takes practice and discipline to be able to create order, but the reward is well worth the effort. Imagine a mind that is peaceful in every moment, joyful at every glance out of the window, confident that is consciously creating exactly what you desire. We all create our reality in every moment, but most people are doing it unconsciously. With some effort on your part, you can learn to do this with the utmost of clarity and precision, so that you can attract experiences and people you desire to have in your midst. Nature operates under precise and immutable laws as the law of gravity. Thoughts are governed by laws with the same exactness as the law of gravity. It is wise to embrace nature's example by living within the laws. Your mind is the source and cause of all circumstances in your life. Therefore, by adjusting your thinking and disciplining your mind, your circumstances will stabilize and improve over time. Thought must be accompanied by action. If you want to climb the top of the hill, you don't just sit at the bottom and pray. At the end of the day, you will probably find you are still sitting there, unless you have mastered the act of teleportation, that is. In order to climb that hill, first you must decide to do so. Then you take a step and another. You may fall back a few steps or take a wrong turn, but you continue climbing until you reach the top. By taking these steps or taking action, you will find that along the way, you have a hand up here and there given by an unseen force. You will meet people that have water to give you and others who show you a shortcut. You may find a walking stick that helps you when you become tired. These are all indications that the universe is doing its part to help you along your journey. However, it all starts with that first step, taking action. Every day, make sure you plan and do something definite that will help you reach your goal. Start with a well-defined objective, think continuously about it, plan your time, and work towards the goal. If your day is full of constructive duties, you will find that there is no room for waste or negativity, and eventually you will reach the crest of the hill.
Fantastic. We're going to listen to more of her work. Not now. Listen, everybody. I want to thank you for your energetic support as I do my traveling this month. And before we say goodbye today, what I'd like to do is let's join together and do this planetary meditation. We've done this invocation before, but each time we do it, it builds upon the last time we did it. It's a very powerful invocation that I wrote and I recorded. And let's set an intention before we begin that we have full galactic disclosure and a world of peace. Thank you, everybody, for all you do.
Greetings, everybody. This is Elizabeth Trutwin. I invite you to this planetary invocation. We invite you, we invoke you, we open to this activation, which received that will instantly awaken fully the 12-strand DNA and reconnect the genetic codings to uplift the veil of duality and activate the full recalling and remembering of ancient sacred knowledge in the fields of astrogenetics, genetic design, and sequencing, bioengineering, geomancy, new archaeology and astronomy, new energy transformation, and technological scientific information. The pulse transmitter will, in presence and silence, be able to be transferred to those who are ready to receive. a conduit of the third heaven gateway information, so that those that are magnetized to receive will be able to create and develop this new technology. Ways to assist the rescuing of this planet and ensure simultaneously that this is done with love, ease and grace, balance and harmony. Please replay this invocation daily as more become prepared. It activates them in that time, in that space. Namaste. Supreme Creator, sages, seers, highest divine beings, and all the divine animals. Sangha Chadvam, Samvadadvam, Samvomanasi Jantam, Samano Prana, Samano Mantra, Samati, Samano Mana, Samano Mantravi, Samano Akuti, Samano Hiryani Va, Sa Hiryam Sa, Chittame Sam. Together, singing, pronouncing, and invoking this perennial mantra, with all the creatures listening in silence, that perennial unity of soul prevailing in all the creatures. The pronouncement of self. The declaration of oneness. Bringing all the unity of all diversity of all creation. My mind. My heart, my senses, my psyche, my chitta, they'll work in harmony. They may tune to divine wholeness. Let my loved one work with me in harmony. Walk with me. Communicate with me. Speak with me. Let my friends feel my love. Feel my energy. Let my community see my harmony and oneness and unity. And let my community and society see and walk in harmony, in peace. Let my country awake to work together in harmony for the betterment of my country and the world. Let the humanity coordinate, exchange, and share fairly and justly. Let no one be unhappy in this world. Let no one suffer. Let no one be ignorant. Let no one feel small and neglected. Let no one feel that she is not whole. Let there be peace within my heart, in my family, in my community, in my country, and in the world. Let there be light. Let there be harmony. Let there be prosperity all over, all around. Let no one be unhappy. Let all walk towards the wholeness. Let all have strength to walk on that path. Path of enlightenment and path of liberation and path of salvation and path of nirvana. Let no one feel deprived of that divine right. Not only your birthright, but right eternal, right perennial. When my heart, when my soul filled with Amrita, the nectar of bliss, when I am fulfilled, I can radiate the fulfillment to others. When I am at peace, I can share my peace to others. When I am happy, I can share my happiness to others. When I am enlightened, I can share my enlightenment to others. When I am joyful and blissful, I can share my joy and bliss to others. Let my heart be filled with divine nectar, divine energy. Let it be purity. Let there be light. Oh, you, all the gods of the universe, those who have achieved that state of consciousness, I invite you, I pray to you, I beg you, I call you to come and be with me today. Help me. Walk with me. Take me there where you are. I invoke that power, that energy. Oh, Dev, oh, Supreme Devi, come to me. Take me to your realm. Let me walk with you. Let me hold your hand. Deva Mahadev, Shiva and Shakti, Kali and Durga, Aldi Shakti, Mahamaya, Sahirjam Va, Samana Mantra, Samana Prana, Samana Atma, Samana Paramatmana, Samana Savidya, Samano Mantra, Samano Mona, Samano Orgasm, Samano Janam, Samano Vanam.
Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week. I'll be in touch soon. Namaste.